friends, in this study of the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that we have been doing for last some Fridays, we are at the last part of it, where Arjuna asked a very pertinent question, a very practical question, that how the life actually gets transformed. What difference do I see between a person who is freed from the bondage of the three gunas and an ordinary person who is bound by three gunas? Is there any tangible difference in the life that they lead? If there is a difference, there is some point in following it. There is some point in assimilating all these ideas and becoming free. Because yes, there is a tangible difference. There is a meaningful difference in the lives of the two. Also, the question was meant to, what should I actually follow in life? What particular things I need to follow to go beyond the bondage of these three gunas? Just to give you a little background, because I see a few new faces here, and it's really always helpful to recapitulate a little bit so that we do not lose the way. This chapter is a very important discussion on the nature of bondage and freedom. That we feel the bondage. If we do not feel the bondage, the question really doesn't arise. It is because we feel bondage that there is this search for freedom. If we do not feel bondage at all, then of course such person need not bother about any spiritual search, because I am free. I don't have to worry about freedom. But when a person feels the bondage and then the operative effects of that bondage, then there is the yearning for freedom. And that yearning therefore demands the reasons for the bondage, so that one can become free. Once you know the reason, when you get the right, adequate, proper, exact diagnosis, then the treatment could be administered. So that is why one looks for what is the bondage, how it comes in our life. And it was discussed very thoroughly, very much at depth, showing all the different ways in which one gets bound here by the three ropes, or one can say three different types of qualities or attitudes, or matters. The word guna has a very broad meaning, and guna also means the ropes with which one can bind, and the things that can be used for tying is called guna. Also, it is the particular quality that also gets called guna. Also, in various philosophical discussions, guna refers to a particular substance that is also called guna. So all these are really not mutually exclusive meaning. They really are combined in our context when we say that the ignorance functions in our life as these gunas. In ignorance, we get bound, and there are these three ways that one gets bound by three different tendencies, or three different ways that one functions. One is the Tattva Guna, which appears in our life as serenity, peace, relative knowledge, and a sense of happiness. And whenever sattva rises in us, we see these signs of the sattva rising. Rajas is where the desires predominate, and these desires propel us to perform various actions, and thus we automatically get the results of those actions, which lead to a continuation of very painful bondage. The result of rajas is suffering. So whenever we get that idea of taking up lot of activity, and the desires come in the mind, because of those desires we cannot sit still, we have to do something. So that is rajas. And then there is the laziness, stupor, the desire, not a particular desire, but one becomes restless, uneasy, and gets just irritated. Not that the person is doing a focused activity, but it is in general a terrible restlessness, and that leads to also the inappropriate, improper actions. Also it leads to in general laziness, quarrelsome nature comes up. You get irritated not for a particular thing or not against a particular person also, just the situation and everything in general you feel, hey, I don't like anything, what is this? So that kind of thing that we experience many times, that is the result of tamas. All these divine, also it was stated that one has to make assiduous efforts to develop more and more sattva, because also all three are bondages. Sattva is a bondage with which you can get rid of the other bondages, and therefore cultivating sattva is very important. This point was raised in some questions that if all three are bondages, why should one try to develop sattva? It is because sattva is the way out of that, those bondages. As an example Sri Ramakrishna used to give, he gave it in similar but a bit different context, that if you have a thorn stuck in your heel, now how to take it out? Just by looking at it, it won't go. So you pick up another thorn, and using that thorn you extract this thorn out, and then afterwards throw both the thorns. So similarly, sattva is the thorn by which the other thorns can be taken out, and thus you become now free of all thorns. So it was shown also that if a person dies while the sattva was predominant in the awareness, then the birth is taken accordingly in a situation, in an environment where there is more possibility of developing sattva. Also it was shown that how this rajas, when somebody dies, when rajas was predominant, then the person takes birth in an environment, in a family full where lot of scope for such desire-oriented activities, lot of desires, there is encouragement to have more desires and so forth. So a life becomes like that. If somebody becomes, somebody dies while under the spell of tamas, then the person takes birth some kind of a brainless creatures which are not having that kind of mindfulness or conscience in them, like the plants. The word used by Lord is Muru Yonisho, and the dumb creatures. Not that we always act like wise creatures, many times we also are quite dumb, but still we, compared to our dumbness too, there are some who have more dumbness. So one naturally takes recourse to those bodies, gets born in them. Now after telling this, Arjuna asks this question that how we see the difference in the life, that kimacharaha, that how such a person acts in life. We understood the philosophical difference, but when it comes to actually living, does this person eat like us? Does this person interact with people like us? How should this person be identifiable in the world, that here is a person that has gone beyond the three gunas? One must know the symptoms, the signs. And so Lord says that the main characteristic here is that the person does not get identified with anything and does not get attached to anything. Plus or minus in the life comes and goes, just flows along, but does not get caught in anything, does not go after anything, does not run away from anything either. It is because that person knows that none of these is real and none of these is going to touch me. If you, for example, if you know that you are sitting in a movie hall and watching a movie, and if you see a car in the screen driving and it may appear that it is coming right towards you, and if you are sure that you are watching movie, you do not get up from your seat and run away. You don't think that the car is going to crush me. And I saw some movies in that 3D theaters, and it really appears that it is all coming to you, and one gets the temptation that maybe I will get crushed. Therefore, there is a sign appears on the screen before the movie began that all these things will appear real and people with weak heart therefore should not sit there seeing the movie because they may get a heart attack. So the car will not crush them, but the heart attack can kill them. So therefore they are warned not to sit there. I thought my heart was strong enough, so I sat through. If you know that it is just a movie, you don't get identified with it. And let nice scenes come in the movie, beautiful flowers, you don't bend ahead to get the fragrance of those flowers. You know that they are movies, that is just pictures in the movie. You may see a
nice cookie there, you don't stretch your hand to pick the cookie from there, and you know that it is not real. So when a person goes beyond three gunas, what happens is this, that the pleasures and pains in the world just pass like a movie. There is no effort to get anything out of it. There is no effort to cling to anything. And that is what is told in the 22nd verse, that he does not hate when the light of knowledge, activity and delusion arise, O son of Pandu, nor desire when deceit. There is no, even if those things go away, there is no desire to get them back. So, just like you don't desire to get something nice that you saw just in the movie, you don't have a desire to get it. You know that it is not real. So, this person's life, therefore in the world, does not get swayed by the fleeting appearances. This is the main important thing. All the other things that are going to be told really hinge on understanding of this important verse, that things will come in that person's life also, like that person will fall sick. Like a normal person who is in bondage will also fall sick. This person also will take medicine and like that person takes medicine. No difference there. This person eats, that person eats. This person says, yes, the person that is born beyond the three gunas, this person also will say, that I like this, I don't appreciate this that much. Like as if an ignorant person is doing that same thing in all appearance. But this person is not hankering after anything. This person is not attached to anything. He is just seeing a movie. Does not affect that person in any way. And the best example that you can see is the life of Sri Ramakrishna. That's how he was living like us in the world, living in the busy city area, not somewhere in the caves in Himalayas. Sometimes we think that if something is far away, then that may be very valuable. Sri Ramakrishna himself told us that because I am so easily available, people don't think that there is something really worth getting from me. If suppose somebody is staying far away in a cave in Himalayas, very difficult to get there, then one would have thought, that is something worth having. I remember in our dispensaries back in India, mobile dispensaries, I used to go with one of them, and villagers were there, they always liked to get shots, because they thought that shots will cure them. Ordinarily their disease is rather advanced, and so just giving some pills is not going to be having any curative effect. So they would insist that they must be given shots. Not only that, if you have a very fine good needle with which to put that medication in, that won't, they would feel that no, it is not right, because it didn't give any pain. It should prick, it has to be pricking, it should give some pain, then only they feel that some treatment has been given to them. If it is all painless, smooth, nice, then the feeling is that it is not good. It is not going to be of any use, and therefore this is told here that Sri Ramakrishna's life right among the life like us, and yet if we see not like us, it was superficially only like us, in appearance like us, and he would eat the food like we eat, and he would sleep in a room like we ordinarily sleep, but yet there is no attachment to anything, no identification with anything, would not be able to consider at all that he is the body. The body is just taken up like one sits in the car, so he would think that he is sitting in the body, but would never consider himself identified with body, and that is where the difference lies. So such person is therefore free from these attachments and bondages. And the idea, the message is that if we become like that, if we start to impress this upon our mind that I am not this changing body, even the thought will bring lot of sense of freedom. Just think that I am not the body and see how much freedom you will start feeling right away. Just this moment, see that I am not body. Actually we are not. Not that we have to imagine that I am not the body. Really we are not body. In fact it is reverse. That we are imagining and lost in that imagination that we are body. And thus because we feel that we are bodies, we feel that I am born and I am going to die. I feel that I am a man or a woman. I feel I am young or old. I feel I need this and I need that. It is because of this identification with body. Just feel that I am not body and say that you are freed from all these worries. Immediately, immediately you get rid of all these I am so many years old, I have this job and I have this wife or husband or kids and all that, because you are not the body. You have none of these. See how much freedom you automatically feel. You do not have to worry about any property. You do not have to worry that you will be losing or gaining anything. All this will become your awareness, the sense of freedom. And you will see immediately that the body has father or mother or children or something. You do not have any mother or father or child. You are not body. Just like your car has tires and the engine and so forth. You don't have that thing. It is the car thing. So when you know that, you do not think that when you buy, say, a new tire for your car, you do not feel that I have grown a tire. But then somebody gets a child is born to somebody. This fellow becomes happy. I got a grandchild. Didn't do anything there, you know, has no connection at all. But yet, that false idea that I have a grandchild or I have a child, or I am a mother, or I am a father. These are the illusions that bind us. So, even momentarily think and see the sense of freedom that one can get through. It is therefore Lord Krishna tells that this is the life of destruction. He is not attached or identified with any of those things. Then 23rd verse, Udasina vadasina gunayo nivicharyate guna vartante ityeva yovadeshati nayate. He who rests like one indifferent and is not disturbed by the gunas, who, realizing that the gunas alone function, is steady and does not waver. That person sees that there is only the action is going on between the guna and the other matters in the world. They are interacting, these gunas are interacting, and thus this person does not get perturbed or disturbed by these. That this world is impermanent, it was formed and it is going to get destroyed. This person doesn't get perturbed by that. Yes, the galaxies and they come and just collide against each other, and so many stars are born and are just pulverized to dust. So this person knows that it is again going on, does not get perturbed by any of these things. Not that this person is insensitive, not that this person therefore does not do anything to serve others, to reduce the pain of a person. He does that, but without any attachment, without any identification. The actions will be in appearance similar to actions that we do, but the content will be very different. The content will be completely different, because there, in this content, there will be no attachment, no desire, nothing is that ties you there. This is where the difference lies. See, Sri Ramakrishna used to talk to people. He used to feel or show the concern to the well-being of the people, and yet always was poised in the samadhi that God alone is real. There was no wavering from this awareness, and that is where the special feature is. We get identified with what is this world moving and get perturbed, disturbed because of what happens around us. Seeing therefore like what the Vedantic text many times called as a witness, and the example that I gave, seeing a movie, you are just witnessing it. You don't get identified with anything. So, one should be like that. To further get into that analogy, suppose an actor who has acted in that movie is watching it. Now, that person in the movie may be put in the prison. But this person watching the movie never thinks that I am being put in the prison. No, I never was put in the prison. It was in the movie that I was put in the prison. In the movie, I was given lot of honor, lot of money. In the movie I became millionaire or billionaire, that doesn't mean I actually have all that. When the person is sitting and watching the movie, he is not identified with what happens in the movie. So similarly, this person beyond the gunas is living in this world, but not being caught in it at all. This is the difference. So that is why udasina. Udasina means sitting at a different plane. That person is sitting on a different plane and therefore is not getting affected by it. Being on a different plane, something may go on at a different plane, you don't get affected by that. So, I am moving a sword much above where you are sitting, a foot above your heads, then even if the sword is moving, it is not going to touch you, it is not going to affect you in any way. So, because it is at a different level altogether. So, such person knows this and thus watches it without getting affected by it. Then, the next verse, some more practical light is given here. Tana dukkha dukkha swastha samalo tashma kanchanaha tulya priya priyo dhira tulya nindatma sanstati. Alike in pleasure and pain, self-abiding, regarding a clod of earth, a stone and gold as of equal worth, the same towards agreeable and disagreeable objects, calm and the same to praise and blame bestowed on him. This is again, as I told, these words become really meaningful when one looks at the life of saints. And Sri Ramakrishna is the most graphic example of all this. Especially the value of Sri Ramakrishna's life is because he is a modern person. His life is very meticulously recorded. You have the photograph of Sri Ramakrishna. So there is not that kind of doubt that whether Lord Krishna, how many years ago he lived, whether there was such a person or not, and such things. But in case of Sri Ramakrishna, you know that historically such a person lived, and so you can see this, that these qualities, they manifest in his life with such intensity and clarity that one can see these signs expressed in Bhagavad Gita. Swami Vivekananda therefore said that in Sri Ramakrishna the scriptures become all alive, manifest. In fact, he made a very bold statement, somewhat sounding fanatic, but really it is impossible to accuse Vivekananda as a fanatic person. Such a broad-minded and liberal person, welcoming and harmonizing everyone, he makes this statement, so one can realize, one can understand that how important it is. He said that in the present age, without having the light of the life of Sri Ramakrishna, it is impossible to understand the true import of the scriptures like Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. If not understood in the light of the light, these become just abstract sentences, good for academicians, but not enough for the spiritual aspirants. These are not statements which are useful for academicians. These are statements made for spiritual aspirants, and therefore it is necessary that one takes a note of Sri Ramakrishna's life and look at it carefully and understand these very important values in his life, so that these verses become clear. So in this next verse he says that look, mana apamanayoho tulya tulyo mitrari bhakshayoho sarvarambha parityagi gunati rasta uchyate. The same in honor and dishonor, the same towards friend and foe, habituated to renounce all actions, such a person is said to have transcended the gunas. Sri Ramakrishna was told because of some misunderstanding that he has to leave this place in Dakshineshwar. He has to go away. And he said fine, and started going with his just towel on his shoulder, without any argument, without any perturbance. Okay, started going. And then the owner of the temple immediately realized the mistake and ran to him and said, oh no, 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 you should not be going. No, no, sorry, you should not be going. Sri Ramakrishna, smiling, he came back without any, and then why you should be telling, you were disrespecting me and now I have decided to go, I will not come back. No, the same equanimity in behavior. Whatever lot of honor given to him, it didn't touch him. People disrespecting and saying all sorts of bad things, that didn't hamper his equanimity either. Never bore a grudge towards someone who tried to hurt him personally, and was never really very closely connected to those who praised him. Praise, blame, pleasures, pain, and none affected him, and yet he was always blissful. Please don't get an idea that this wall doesn't get affected even if you scream abuses, hurl abuses at the wall, remains sane. And even if you say, oh wall, you are so nice, beautiful, the wall doesn't respond to that either. Was Sri Ramakrishna or the saintly person, is that person like a wall? No, not like a wall. That person understands, sees everything, and yet retains the equanimity that is sensitive to everything, and yet not thrown off the balance by anything. That is where the special feature is. A person could be just insensitive like a wall, and so would appear that the person is not swayed by pleasures and pain because of insensitivity. This is not a spiritual quality. It is insensitivity is a very different thing. And this is a person who cannot love anybody, and therefore is not attached to anybody. That is not what is called spiritual detachment. It is a very different thing. This person loves everyone as oneself. There is no distinction between him and the other people in the essential substance as such, and therefore doesn't get affected. Is it, suppose I tell myself, oh, you are a fool.
Am I getting affected by that?
Why did you say like that?
It is not so. Even if I praise myself, it doesn't affect me.
So,
it is something similar. That this person, it is not insensitivity, it is not like being a wall. In fact, it is a tremendous sensitivity. A sensitivity of much higher level than what we have. Because of that sensitivity, this person's life is full of tremendous love. If one is just detached because has no love for anyone, because has no relation with anyone, because is so self-centered in the different sense, body-centered, that doesn't even look at the, what discomfiture he or she might be causing to others. That is not a person who is spiritually detached. It is important for such person to cultivate really attachment first and then learn detachment. It is that person is far from spiritual detachment. First let that person cultivate some love, some attachment, some concern, and then go beyond it. It is Vedantas sometimes get misunderstood that when it is said that you should be living a detached life, many take it as the life of like a wall or a stone, insensitive. No, it is life of tremendous true love, and that is why it should be studied in the light of the lives of such great souls. That it is their description, how loving were they, who could be more loving than a Buddha or Jesus. And we talk of all love, but really are we capable of loving like these saints? And yet see how detached they were. So this is where the real meaning of being sane and to pleasure and pain, honor or dishonor. In all situations this person is sane, although he is sensitive and understands everything, yet sees that they are of no ultimate value at all. So the next verse, that how do you get this? Is there a way to go beyond these gunas, then something that I can practice? You have told that these are the qualities of the person who goes beyond the gunas. Now tell me, what should I do to get it? Important thing that I want to get it too. What should I do? It is good to tell that, yes, if you go to stay in Disneyland, then you will see all these nice things. You will see, have that roller coaster ride, and you will have all those nice pictures there. You will see many, many beautiful things. Really, you will be very happy. That is what you will get when you go to Disneyland. Then comes the really a question that, okay, tell me then how to get there. How does one get to from Providence? How does one get to the Disneyland? So the route is then told, okay, you have to go to California and so forth, then you will get to see that. So here also, how do I go beyond the three gunas? Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. The 26th verse. He who
serves me alone through the unswerving yoga of devotion, transcend these gunas and become fit for the state of Brahman. Goes beyond all the states. When one practices that unswerving devotion and service, he who serves me alone, maam cha, that word cha is there, avyabhicharena bhakti yogena, unswerving devotion. And with that devotion, if this person holds on to me, then that person will go beyond all three gunas and become one with Brahman. And that is how the life will get transformed. The same analogy you can stretch that, okay, if you get into the flight that takes you any city close to Disneyland, then you get into that flight. Get into that flight, don't get into some other flight. So that is the important thing. Worship and serve God alone. Take that flight that goes to that city, not somewhere where there is no such place. So don't go in some other flight. Go to that flight and continue till you land. Don't get restless and jump in the middle. So it is important that you continue the journey with tremendous patience. With that alone, then you will be able to go. And what will you get? Brahma-bhūya, kalpate. You become one with the true nature of the world. You become one with the existence itself. That is Brahman. Brahma-bhūyāya kalpate. You and Brahman, there will be no difference then. You and God, there will be no difference then. Yes, friends, Bhagavad Gita is very clear about it, that there will be no difference in essence. Differences will be there in appearance, okay, but in essence there will be no difference whatsoever. You will come that unification with Brahman. You will be at the same state. You will be one when you get there. As we were meditating in the beginning of this class, see, if we these lines that separate us, these lines, we can see that they are products of imagination, products of ignorance. You cannot specify these lines. You cannot say that here at this line I end and the world begins. These lines are not there at all. They are just fantasies, imaginations. And so the life that we are living right now is just life based on a false imagination, life based on total ignorance. And so just think that these lines don't exist. Then what are you? You are Brahman. You are just Brahman. If you think that I am so and so, you draw a line and then you are that so and so. Otherwise, you are Brahman. Just get rid of this false idea. That is what Lord tells us. And nothing else. We have to just give up. Nothing else to be given up. Only foolishness, dumbness. That is what is being asked of us. Give up dumbness. Do we want to be fools? Okay, then you will get the result of being fools. Why? You want to be full Raj? No. What do you want to be?
Smart.
Why? Good. So, If you want to be wise, then these, all these foolish ideas, just discard them. They are not real. I am not really bound by this silly line that I draw, that I am so and so. And see what happens then. The moment, even just by in imagination you do it and see, what a great sense of freedom you feel. And when you realize this truth, that is what happens. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. We are Brahman. Only we have to realize this. We have, don't have to gain anything. We don't have to get anything. We have to just know this truth that we are that. Each of us is that. And that this is the result of what? A devotion. Come on, instead of devoting to names and forms, devote to God and devote to the embodiment of this truth. And thus through that devotion, you will get more and more attached emotionally, psychologically, and thus your understanding will change. You will see that you are divine. That you know that story, it is similar to that. I don't want to repeat that story, that how that sheep, lion which thought that it is a sheep, understood that it is really a lion. Was it not lion earlier? Was, but not functionally. It was in reality lion, but all actions were as if I am a sheep. Now what did it have to do to become lion, Vishwanath? What? Throw the ignorance, that's all. Throw the idea that I am a sheep, and then you are a lion, you don't have to become lion. So we have to just throw this silly idea that I am such and such man or such and such woman and all and such. Just throw these ideas, then we are divine. And the path to that is holding on to God. So serve God. And as we serve God, this truth will dawn in our awareness. Why? That also is told by Lord. Why should we be worshipping God and not something else? See, we all worship at different times different things. Whatever we feel is going to bring pleasure, money, happiness, and such things, we worship at that time those things. And since those things change in our life, we keep on worshipping different things. When a child, in children it is very easily observable how quickly they throw one thing and grab another thing. They think that, well, I want a particular thing, a particular toy, and they want it with such intensity. You give at that time something else to them, they will throw away. No, no, I want that, because that is seen as the source of all happiness. So they worship that. That is worship. The flow of mind should be going to that. That is worship. The mind should be going towards that. That is bhakti. And so the child's mind is going to that. And suppose it gets it after 2 minutes or even less. The child realizes there is no fun in it, and throws it, goes after another thing. As we grow up, we do similar things. Let me have a wife or let me have a husband, and the mind just puts into it. After a while, then you see that there is no fun in it. And then you blame that probably my partner was not right or this happened wrong. But really, there is not that one-pointed devotion there at all. One-pointed devotion can be only to God. That is the meaning of one-pointed devotion. On anything in the world, you can never have one-pointed devotion. You may love for 5 minutes, and many love music. How long will they listen to music? For some time. After a while it starts, sounding very shrill, and you don't enjoy it anymore. I gave that example sometimes from a story of P.G. Woodhouse, a wonderful humor writer, that a girl and a boy, as it happens in these stories, they, after lot of problems, got united finally, and then the girl sat with the boy near him and said to him, "Oh, I would like to sit here eternally like this with you." And the boy didn't want to discourage her, so he said, "I too will like that, but first let me have some breakfast." That is important right now. So our preferences in the world keep on changing like that. But a devotion, one-pointed devotion, therefore can be only to God, who is the container of everything. And if you love God, you get everything. If you don't love God, not that you will get something, you will get nothing but bondage. So this is the difference, friends. Lord clarifies that therefore in the last verse, Brahmano hi pratishthaham amritasya cha avyayasya cha shashvatasya cha dharmasya sukhasya ekantikasya cha. All that we are seeking, each and everything that we are really seeking, is contained in God. And therefore it is told that love God with one-pointed devotion, and then you will go beyond all three gunas. Otherwise, suffering in the bondage, it is like that. So, for I am the embodiment of Brahman, of immutable immortality, of the eternal religion, and of absolute bliss. I will take a few more minutes today, because this is going to be the last Bhagavad Gita class before we take a break for the summer. That Lord says, "I am the embodiment of Brahman." The word Brahman, where do we see that Brahman manifests clearly? In God. That the embodiments, this word embodiment is very beautiful here, that the incarnation of God. You see that the Brahman manifests there, Godhood manifests there, as Vivekananda says, that howsoever we may stretch our imagination about God, it will still fall short of what these great people have manifested in their own life. So, that is Brahman, Brahmano hi pratishthaham, and then immortality. They show the essence of immortality, immutable immortality, very beautiful word, that it is not the immortality that one thinks of a running ego. Running ego is seen as a kind of immortal. Like we feel that my body is changing, all these different things are changing, thoughts are changing, but still I am the same, I am immortal. That is the ego. That appears like immortal, but this is immutable immortality. And then further, shashvatasya cha dharmasya, the following of true religion comes here. Religion is not following just a few rituals. It is not just following a tradition. It is not also a sense of belonging in a political or social sense, but it is following this path of emancipation. That really is the religion. And sukhasya ekantikasya cha, the bliss absolute, that we seek but is never found. And we always are in that say that I want this happiness. That is why all fairy tales end like that, that they lived happily ever after. And that is why something that is impossible is called a fairy tale. That it is an impossibility, so gets the name as fairy. It is just a fairy tale, it is not real. Because that happily living ever after never occurs. When does it occur then? When you realize God. See again Sri Ramakrishna, in the midst of all diseases, all different types of worldly things around, his bliss did not diminish even in the least. So, that is what is described here. So this 14th chapter, friends, by the grace of God, we concluded it today. It is very, very important for molding our lives towards this goal. The life has to be molded. It is a practical science. And so, the more we dwell on this issue of molding our life, the more advanced we will be on this path. Let us hope that we get the inspiration and guidance from the Divine to go on doing it with steadfast devotion. I will not take questions today because it is already getting late, and tomorrow there is a retreat on extracting answers. So there you will see how the we will discuss how the answers can be extracted, whether somebody gives or not, and we need to know how to get those answers extracted. So that is the idea of retreat tomorrow. So friends, I will conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Imanyat Shastra Vistavai Yasvayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinishita Ekam Shastram Devati Putra Vidam Eko Devo Devati Putra Eva Eko Mantra Satya Namanyani Karmapyekam Satya Devasya Deva Shri